Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. This time out, I'm going to be reviewing Stephen Donaldson's The Real Story, the First in the Gap series of books. I actually finished this book quite a few days ago because I've been holidaying and being doing this and that. Currently, I'm in Honningsvåg in Norway, and if you don't know where that is, that's just a little bit south of the northernmost point you can get when you drive here in Norway, although I arrived on a plane. Yeah, just north of here is Nordkapp. And last night, my plane landed at like 10:30, so I went over into the hotel and then got a taxi out and watched the sun. Well, it didn't set, but it was there at midnight, and when you look out from Nordkapp, the sun at midnight is still above the horizon and it's due north, and it's like this really bizarre kind of situation, but had a lot of fun there as well. And yesterday I visited Oslo too, so I'll be putting some photos up there on my blog, which you can find at lukeburridge.com/blog, but not for a few days, I'm sure. Anyway, so I've been doing all the different kinds of stuff, finishing a holiday and I'm on a work trip, and I think I might as well just get straight into it now, really. This real story, otherwise known as The Gap into Conflict, because it suddenly became, I think he wrote it as a standalone story, and then it became the first in The Gap series. So then he named all the books The Gap into something. So there's a Gap into Conflict, and The Gap into this, and The Gap into that. But otherwise it's known as The Real Story. And it's one of the most recommended books by emails and other ways of people recommending books to me to review here on the podcast. And there's the whole series was there in the secondhand bookshop around the corner from where I live, called Another Country in Berlin. And so I thought I'd just give it a go and read the first part. The thing is, I have actually read this story before, this first episode in the Gap series, but it was so long ago that I couldn't remember if I thought it was any good or not. My remember is that I didn't enjoy it so much, but I never bothered following up on the next books in this series, in the Gap series, but I couldn't really remember what I didn't like about it, or if I did like it or should have liked it more or anything like that. But it's only a short book, so I thought, hey, I'll read it again and see what I really think about the book, and then I'll continue on with the rest of the series. It'd be like a refresher to get into the rest of the series. But the thing is, now that I've read the book again, I remember why I didn't bother reading the rest of the series the first time out. And like I said, I actually finished this book a few days ago, so I don't have the copy of the book with me here, but I did write some of the characters and some of the bits and pieces down. Normally at this point of this story, I say when the book was, or this part of the review, I say when the book was written, but I can't remember. I think it's like early 90s or maybe late 80s or something this book was first written, but maybe it was earlier than that. I don't know, actually. So anyway, let's get straight into the world of the book. It's sort of space opera, kind of miners in space, space station kind of stuff going on. So the most important thing that this whole series is named after is the Gap Drive. And that is his sort of like Gap Drive kind of three-word explanation of how to get from one planet to another very quickly, or from one star to another very quickly. And you don't know anything about the Gap Drive except when you press the button, you move, and also it turns people mad. It's not really explained why, how people are turned mad, or why it turns people mad, but one in every sort of like 50 or 100 people who go on a Gap Drive journey and become mad and start flipping out and doing mad stuff as well. Again, not really very well explained, but we'll just take it as read. That's what happens. Great. So a big chunk of the galaxy, or quite a lot of star systems, is under Earth control, or under man's control. And what these guys are doing, this book focuses on a large space station and the space around the space station. And they're all the economy here is all mining based, because they need the minerals to be sent towards Earth. And the money comes from Earth back out again, and that's spent on, and food and stuff, and supplies and stuff come back out from Earth back up to the space station and to the miners. And but there's not only miners, there's also pirates who go in and they say they're miners, but they're not really miners, and everyone knows they're not miners. They're actually there, and they steal things and kill people. And then the whole situation is policed by the mineral company, the ore company, who does all the trading with Earth and sends the minerals and all the metals and rocks or whatever's being sent to Earth. They're the people. This company is the people who police the whole situation. And that's pretty much the setup there, quite basic. So, the story. It's a very short book. I wrote down that it was only 126 pages. So there's not a huge amount of story to go into. And I can't really spoil it very much either, because it sort of spoils itself, or it sort of explains itself in the first few pages. Here's the setup of the book. It actually goes, right, there's this woman, and there was this man, and they were in a bar together, and she was obviously there not under her own will, and then this other guy comes in, and he's a hero, and then they left, and then a bit later, the hero has rescued the woman from the bad guy, and that's it. And it just explains that maybe in about two or three paragraphs, or maybe two paragraphs, and says, well, that's what you would have seen if you didn't really look into the story very closely, but there it is. That's what happened. Ah, but now let's look at the story a little bit deeper. And then the next stage of the book is about five pages that goes into the characters a bit more, and it looks a little bit deeper and looks at their motivations. You've got Angus Thermopylae, he's the bad guy. And then there's Morn Highland. She's the damsel in distress in this bar. They're together there. And like I said, that it tells a little bit of the history of the characters. And then there's Nick Socorso, and he's like the hero figure, and he's like dashing and everything like that. And it tells a little bit of his story. But then again, it's only from the people who know them a little bit better and know the situation a little bit better. But you get like a deeper view into the story there. And again, I'm not going to go into too much of the details, but it involves them, you know, skipping out across the systems and fighting battles in space and coming back again. But nobody really knows what happened when they went out there, and nobody really knows how they kept, you know, avoided each other. And in the end, nobody knows really how Morn got away from Angus in the end and towards Nick. And so then you've got the basic story. You know who's going to win, you know who's going to lose, you know who's going to do this, and you know who's going to do that, and you know this, and you know, and some of the mysteries are explained there in the first five pages. And then what you do, you get another 120 pages of a much closer look than at the characters, and this is then the real story. And you find out that the bad guy really is the bad guy, but then Morn Highland, the damsel in distress, she's not exactly who she says she was. She's actually an undercover police operative. And then Nick Socorso, you realize that he's not really the big hero that he says he is. You know, he's you know, this other thing. And in the end, yeah, they sort of, the situation resolves itself. But the point is that there's not a huge amount of mystery to be explained. Like I say, all you find out about is the different motivations. There are two or three tiny other mysteries that are explained, that sort of like these questions in this first five pages of the book, which are sort of left unexplained, and they're explained a bit better. But as soon as you know that Morn is a police operative, a police woman, in a way, and you understand sort of Nick's motivations, all the rest of it just falls into place anyway. So when you get the motivations of the real characters, you realize that the real story isn't actually what the people watching them in the bar thought was the real story. But what really happens isn't actually that much more interesting than what we first read about in the first five pages. It is a little bit different. Yeah, I mean, that's the point. It is the real story, and the other one was the non-real story, I guess you could say. But the non-real story is like, I mean, you could have wrapped up the real story in five pages as well, and you didn't really have to go through all of that to find it out, especially when you know who's going to win in the end, that none of the characters are going to die, that this is going to happen, that that's going to happen. And you know, it's a real strange thing. It's the main problem here is that Stephen Donaldson, he thinks he's got this really clever idea, and it is sort of a really clever idea, but the execution isn't up to what he thinks it must be. And you sort of know this because following the story, then we get this 17 page afterwards, and like I say, the story itself is only 120 pages long, and then you get 17 pages afterwards of his explaining his ideas, where he got his idea from, how he does it with the writing, and you know, and all the drafts that he went through, and the basis of the story, and the ideas, and the concepts, and the themes, and all this different kind of stuff. And you know, then he says, oh, it's going to tie into the following books of the series in this way, and actually it's all going to have something to do with the Ring Cycle and the Valkyries and this and that. And once I read the afterwards, I was thinking, oh, okay, well, that's sort of a bit interesting that he's taken that approach. And, you know, some of the questions that I had were answered. But here's the thing. It still didn't make the story any more interesting, the real story or the other story, any more interesting. One of the key things that he wanted to get across was changing the roles. One second, room service. Please wait. One thing he wanted to do is explain the changing roles of the characters. So the idea is that Angus is the archetypal villain, Morn is the archetypal damsel in distress, and Nick is the archetypal hero. But when they get through to the end of the book, you realise... One second, excuse me. Okay, I'm back. So once you get to the end of the story, you find out that Angus isn't only the villain; he's also in distress by the end of the book as well. Nick becomes the villain himself, and Morn becomes the person who saves Angus, who's in distress. And again, it's sort of like you look at it and you think, well, that's an interesting idea, but did it really make the story any more interesting? And that's what it comes down to when the book is called The Real Story. It can't just be sort of like a literary, like thematic exploration of archetypal roles in heroic stories. Well, it can be, but it's still got to be, I don't know, it's just this whole thing that, it's like, it's all plot, but then, it's talking about the plot, but then it talks about motivations, but then I don't really like the motivations and things like that, so it's really strange. And again, like I say, he showed his hand too early, because when you get to the space battles, you might as well just say, there was a space battle, but you knew who won, and you know who doesn't die, so there's no tension there, so I might as well just write it really quickly. I think it was just the amount of time that was spent on it, even for such a short book, didn't really do it for me. And then I was thinking, as I was reading it, I know what's going to happen here. I know this is going to happen. I've worked out all the secrets now, and it doesn't really, the real story is not filling me on anything that I don't know. So I think, well, maybe the real story will continue past the point that we already know the non-real story happens, So we're going to find out what happens afterwards. And what happens afterwards will only take place if I know what the real motivations were and the real story was. But actually, no. The non-real story and the real story end at exactly the same point. So again, we've come back around in a big loop, and all we've discovered is slightly different motivations. So yeah, it shows his hand too early and then ends the hand too early. And this is actually one of the reasons why I sort of hesitated about giving this novella a podcast of its own, because not only because it's really short and, I probably thought about it and are now recording it and, making notes, it actually takes longer than it took me to actually read the novella in the first place. But then I was thinking, okay, maybe I should just read the next book in the series and wrap this story up into that review. Because this is what I'm saying, when you get to the end of this, you think, well, okay, we know the real story, but actually what's going on here and what do we need to know? But no, it was written as a standalone story, so I thought I'd review it in its own podcast anyway. So, the characters, get onto them. Yeah, when you write a story where you're not quite sure who the antagonist is meant to be, and all three characters are all antagonists to each other... and there's not really any real heroes in this as well. You're thinking, okay, well, this could be a bit strange. And it is a bit strange, but then it's like, I don't really like any of the characters. Morn, Morn Highland, she has, I guess, maybe a few redeeming qualities, but, I can't even remember what they are except that she's really, really, really good looking. And Nick, no redeeming qualities there at all. But, he turns out, this hero guy turns out to be quite reprehensible. But at least he's got this interesting backstory. And I was like, well, okay, this is the real story. But the real story that I wanted to read about more is actually Nick and his past and what made him into the hero, the despicable hero that he is. But then you get Angus, who's just repellent. And I didn't enjoy spending any time with him at all. But unfortunately for me, the majority of the book is told from his point of view. Well, not so much from his point of view, but it follows him very closely and says what he's thinking and says what he's doing and that kind of stuff. And as I said before, when I've done these reviews as well, I don't mind reading about despicable characters and unlikable characters, but they have to be interesting. And Donaldson says in his afterwards that he wanted to start with an archetype and then he wanted to go beyond it and change it. But it doesn't really do that. It doesn't move beyond that very much at all. I mean, it does slightly, but in the end, Angus is evil and that's it. We read about him killing people with no remorse, so you can tick that box. And then he rapes Morn repeatedly, but not sort of out of passion, but sort of he thinks about it and he goes, okay, I'm going to rape this person, and then he rapes them. And it's like, okay, you're pressing all of the look how evil I am buttons, and he's cowardly as well, but evil and cowardly have been done so much before. But again, it doesn't make it interesting. It's like, okay, so we've got this really evil guy and I really hate him. I really don't like spending any time with him. But at the end of the book, I'm like, okay, I still don't really care for this person at all. But this is one of the, harder parts of the novel for me. But again, I don't mind a more difficult part or a weaker part of the novel. If the story had been more interesting, I'd have gone with it. But, you know, like some kind of boringly repellent main character. Or if the world building had been, you know, more than just sort of like insipid space pirates, you know, I'd have gone with it as well. But it sort of lacked those other things that let me get on with this main character. And the other characters are so incidental, it's hardly worth talking about. Oh yeah, technology and science and stuff like that. It's been a few days, but I can't remember anything except the sort of general space opera tropes, you know, faster than light ship, woo, space station. Oh no, there is a brain control device, and you implant it in someone's head, and then you've got this remote control, and you can control what they do. But it never actually explains what the remote control looks like, or how you could possibly use a handheld remote control to make people carry out all of the complex instructions that they seem to have to carry out here in this book. And I've not really got any idea there at all. But yeah, so there's a little bit of interesting stuff going on there. Writing style, let me say about the action. No, I don't really have much to say. Yeah, it's definitely written. Like I say, not much more to say there. But, you know, all the action, you know what's going on. But then you know who's going to survive. So there's not a lot of tension to the sort of action writing or battles or anything like that. But the writing style itself, very strangely for a modern book, I found this was written in like an unrestricted third-person point of view, which means you've got like this omnipresent narrator sort of who can jump into the head of any character and explain what they're thinking or seeing or feeling, and then he can talk about other things and talk about how it was viewed from other people. And I actually really quite like this because it's very well done here. Starts off very nicely, like when this sort of overview and they're saying, well, this person was thinking this and this person was thinking that and this person was thinking this, and that's what everyone saw and this is what's going on. You know, it's sort of like this very, you know, very far removed thing. And then, which is actually really good, that when you get into space with Angus by himself, and it sort of just goes down to his point of view and you follow very much his story, but we're never inside his head. It tells us what he's thinking, what he's feeling, what he's doing, you know, what he's seeing and everything like that. But because we've got this level, we're on a different level, we've got this layer between us and him, like the narrator is always commenting about how despicable he is and how hateful he is. And I'm really glad of that, actually, because if it wasn't for that layer level, we're on a different level than the character, and we've got like this layer of the narrator between us, then I wouldn't have been able to keep reading it, because this person is so repellent. You know, you have to have that bit in between. It's like a few weeks ago when I was reviewing Old Man's War, John Perry is doing all this thing, and he's going there and he's killing people and shooting people and doing all this kind of stuff, but it's only first person, so he's saying what he was doing, and he's sort of thinking he was cool or thinking he was clever or thinking it was exciting. And I was reading it thinking, surely I'm, as a reader, not meant to think this is exciting or acceptable, and what are his politics, and, you know, what's Perry sort of making this all out to be, you know, what's going on here. But thankfully, in this book, Angus is, you know, not, I wouldn't say equally despicable as John Perry, but, you know, he does these actions which are just as brutal, and rape as well. So I guess that's more brutal too. But like I say, the way it's narrated. So it's actually, I think this book is very well written. Stephen Donaldson obviously knows what he's doing there. So that was actually made it quite interesting to read in a way. Because that kind of style of writing is very rare these days, I guess. And the themes of the book, the 17-page afterwards, that actually explains some of the themes. But I really didn't get a lot out of the book, except for those sort of like basic things, sort of like the changing roles and the looking into more deeper motivations of archetypal heroes and damsels in distress and all that kind of stuff. But what I was really thinking when I was reading this book is like, okay, if people really acted this badly, society would break down completely, or some vigilante group would have killed Angus years ago, and probably Nick as well. Because, you know, I'm just reading it and thinking, wow, I mean, if I was that person, I would shoot him, and that would be it. You know, and there would be nothing to it after that, because you just wouldn't be able to live with people anywhere near you, in the same galaxy as you, who are, you know, behave as badly as this. And that seemed to be the book for me. It was like a message to say, no matter how badly you behave, if the author thinks you should survive until the end of the story, that will happen. You know, no matter how much logic says that the characters should die, or the logic of the story would dictate it, and how much they, you know, the police should have dealt with them years and years ago, if the police exist at all or have any authority at all. And then you know, the afterword says, "Ah, okay, and Morn and Angus will be the main characters throughout the next books in the series." And I'm like, really? You know, are these guys worth more, you know, spending more time on? But I guess Stephen Johnson thinks so. So, yeah, maybe the series, the continuing series, will be some kind of unparalleled artistic sort of epic science fiction classic creation. But I've got a feeling it's probably going to be sort of a bit more mindless space opera with sort of like pretensions at art. And it's like, oh, yes, it's all based on the Ring cycle. And I'm like, really? Yeah. So overall, I guess the redeeming virtue of this book is it's quite short, which is really cool. And again, I don't like mind these, you know, experimental stories, you know, even unsatisfying experimental stories, if they only take a few hours to read. And I finished this book in a single sitting. And actually, for the time spent and the amount of enjoyment I've got about thinking about the book, and you know it's a pleasure to think about a book and to see not so much what's wrong with it or how it's flawed, but you know, just it's definitely a different approach to storytelling, and I really appreciate that. And it's and it's obviously got some more things going on in this short story than whole other novels do, but it doesn't actually make it that interesting to read at the time. So I'm going to give this novella, it's certainly not a novel, going to give it 2 stars. And because it's what I always try and do, if an author doesn't do so well, I'll always give them another chance. So when I get back to Berlin, I will read the next in this series. And hopefully more questions will be answered. For example, I had this question. Like, if you steal the only supplies coming to a space station, and you don't have a gap drive to get to another space station or anywhere else, where do you sell the supplies that you just stole? And I'm thinking, well, that's a bit strange. And actually, Donaldson says in the afterwards that this will be explained in the next book in the Forbidden Space. You know, there's something else going on there on a wider thing that didn't, you know, a wider vista that didn't even play into this story. So it's obviously going to open out a lot more. So I look forward to reading that. Yeah, 2 stars overall. The next episode, I'm going to review a science fiction book, very old one. There's a sort of my little dedication, my little celebration of the 40th anniversary of the Apollo moon landings. So I'm going to read Jules Verne, From the Earth to the Moon, or Journey to the Moon, or whatever the translation you want it to be. So, yeah, I've actually already finished that book, and I'll get up a review online as soon as possible. So, that's it. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Thanks for listening. You can follow me and my travels and everything that I'm doing, and the episodes when I put out new episodes and stuff like that, and all my other stuff I post on Twitter. So go to Luke Burridge. No, at Luke Burridge. No, Twitter. You know how to do it. My blog, lukeburridge.com/blog. If you want to recommend books to me, best way to do it is on goodreads.com, and check out the books I've got in my shelf, and that's coming up soon on goodreads.com/Luke Burridge. Or otherwise, just email me, luke@juggler.net. And thanks for all the people who've emailed me over the last few days. Haven't had a chance to reply to them, and I don't have internet access here, so I can't reply here on the podcast, but I will get to them. So thanks a lot for all of those things, and thanks for listening.